This is Dialogue. Dialogue, a presentation of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News. Once again, our continuing dialogue with Mae Brussel, political research specialist, Dialogue Assassination. Well, Mae, you know, a lot of people ask, aren't you worried for your life? Aren't you worried you're coming out with all this stuff? And if it's true, how long are they going to let you continue and all that sort of thing? Do you ever get any harassment or anything?
Bob, why did you bring that subject up?
Well, because we record these programs. They're pre-recorded. We record them on Tuesday of each week.
Yes.
And then they don't get on the air till Saturday. And on last week's program, you said something about that you weren't going to pay your income tax until such and such and so and so conditions were met. And before that program got on the air, the International Revenue Service was checking into your tax record. Now, how could that happen?
Right. Well, you know, you were talking, you bring up this subject, we go on the air, and do I feel safe? And I think one day we should do a whole dialogue on that. And I have just spent the last 12 hours or so with my family who are visiting me from Southern California, and my parents have been not disagreeing with anything I say or my research or the reasons for my doing it, but they are so afraid that I'll be killed. And we've had this dialogue going back and forth in my home all evening, last night and this morning before I came in. So your ESP, we haven't discussed it when I came in, but this has been the running conversation, and I wanted my father to be a guest on the show. I said, will you come in with us and do a dialogue? He had his own radio show all up the state of California for 35 years and is prominent in Los Angeles. And I said, would you do a dialogue on my show, be a guest on my show? And of course he wouldn't. He wouldn't come in. And his fear, his big fear, is that I will be killed. And I said, if I get a letter that says stop today, I will stop. But I feel that everybody's life is in danger in this country, most people's lives, that we are headed towards the kind of treatment that Germany got, first killings inside by the government, and then we'll get, I've said before, people from other shores will come in and free those that are left and imprisoned, because this system is coming down heavy, and after 72 it's going to get more oppressive. And we've talked about fear of life. As far as the Internal Revenue, I said last week that I would not pay my taxes this year until the National Archives is opened up and until I have access to the information of who killed John Kennedy, because he was elected by a majority and I was a registered Democrat, and I didn't elect Walter Rostow or McGeorge Bundy. They didn't run for president. And I didn't elect Lyndon Johnson either. He was selected on that ticket to get the electoral votes of Texas.
I don't recall voting for Kissinger or Robert Helmer.
We didn't vote for Kissinger or Helmer, any of that team, or John Conley. And I feel that the evidence of who committed the murders of the legally elected president should be available to everybody. So I'm withholding my taxes. And we went on the air on Saturday, and we made this tape Tuesday morning last week. Thursday, the Internal Revenue was at my ex-husband's store. We got a divorce 2 years ago. And they came and wanted all of the papers that he has and the divorce agreements and how much money I'm getting. And they would be back. They made their appearance with the Internal Revenue. And what does Mrs. Brussel have? What do you give her? We have talked about agents in residence at every radio station, at every newspaper in the country. It doesn't matter who it is. The tape was made on Tuesday, and Thursday the Internal Revenue was there.
But the main point is that program did not go on the air until Saturday.
Until Saturday.
And yet, the Thursday before that, they were checking into your
tax
records.
They're doing their homework. I got a phone call at the station.
That wasn't too cool. They should have at least waited until Monday or Saturday afternoon or 15 minutes after the program went off the air or something like that.
Well, they just went on down and started doing their
2 days before the program went on the air.
They were already reacting to it. That's right. I got a call this week from some fellows at a servicemen's club, young men, talking about the assassination, and this generation is supposed to have forgotten what happened, but luckily, because of your radio station and my research, we can keep people alive to the history of their times, even though those who committing these crimes want us to forget it. So one of the young fellows called the station, and then you called me, and he wanted to know who Oswald's lawyer was. They were having a discussion, and I made the point that Oswald never went to trial. He was killed. But one of the fellows remembered some lawyer that represented him, and I said that when Oswald was arrested, he asked for the name of John Apt. That was given to him by his intelligence agents that he worked with, and John Apt was a lawyer for the Communist Party in New York. And he was supposedly going to seek the help of Apt. Apt wouldn't even answer back or respond to this call at all.
Well, that was to
make tie in
the suspicion that Lee Harvey Oswald was part of a communist conspiracy.
That's right. And then and Apt knew he wasn't, didn't want to get in on this thing at all, and didn't even answer. And 2 days later, Oswald was dead, so that they could say, see, he had the name of a communist lawyer. The lawyer didn't fall for it, but the fellow who was talking had in his mind that Oswald was a communist and had the name of the communist lawyer. And I think it's very important that you ask these questions that you have on your mind, and I will give you my research information, not my opinion, but what I have actually documented, and you can call the station, as we said before, write a postcard, and I'll answer, because the same week that this call came, there was an article in Life magazine, this last issue of February the 4th, and it has a picture of two young people, and it says, "No use for illusions." And I'm going to read the first two paragraphs of the article. The top heading said, in quotes, "They were children during the wild storms of the 60s that are finishing high school. Now they are wary of almost everything, of protest, experiments with drugs, sex, communes. They want security, stability, and material comfort." It begins,
"The American dream."
The American dream. "They cannot remember a time when there was no Vietnam War. They were 8 when John F. Kennedy was shot, and some of them recall it with eerie precision because of the depth to which it disturbed the adults in their world. The assassination signaled the atmosphere in which they would grow up, an atmosphere of violence and suddenness in which unforeseen events could wipe out what seconds before was certainty. But at 14 or 15, sex then became an issue in their relationships. They lived through everything, if not directly, vicariously through television, the Chicago Convention riots, starting of communes, sensitivity trainings at Esalen, the killing at Kent State. And now they are 16 and 17, and they're ready for material comfort." Now, end quote. Now, I meet a lot of young people and young adults and speak around this nation. I'm beginning to speak at more groups. I've been invited to talk to the Lions Club this week, another Mothers for Peace, and the Human Rights Day at the Monterey College. I'm going around, and I see people, young, old, establishment, who feel that the 60s and 70s aren't out of us yet. And Life magazine is trying to tell you, we survived this. Every week there's an article telling us, now that you've made it through the turbulence, you can relax and get back to normal. And I don't want you to be what they call normal, which is to accept cold-blooded killings and lobotomies and electronic warfare and napalm, which happened last night and the night before. That isn't normal. They tell you that's normal, and you don't have to protest. So I'm glad that this young fellow called me. I hope all of you who have questions don't
worry. I can recall just this past week, I don't have an FM radio in my car, so the only radio stations I can get are AM stations. So driving to and from work, I generally listen to KGO a lot, the talk shows. And Dunbar, one morning this past week, had a call from a gentleman who was referring to some guest that Dunbar had on his TV show. And I didn't see the TV show, so I don't know the context, but my point is the statement the guy made. He said, "Now, that woman is a communist, there's no doubt about it. You'll see. In a couple of years or so, they're going to pick her up, and that'll prove it. She's a communist."
That'll prove that she's a communist.
And this was really, this man was very sincere. That was his reality on life. If they pick her up, then that proves she was a communist.
Like in Nazi Germany, if they say you were a communist, then clear them away, you're an enemy of the state. That's right. Well, I'm glad that this fellow called, and I want you all, if you have any questions in your mind of what you were told when you were the age that they're describing now or later in years, wherever curiosity you have, if you have a question to answer, I'll always answer it. Now, this week we had an article that Dr. Leary is facing expulsion. Governor Regan is working very hard to get Timothy Leary sent to this country and back into prison.
Why?
Well, Timothy Leary got a 10-year term for possessing marijuana. But the oppressors in our society stop at nothing to put down those people who have related to the youth or helped free them from some of the vines that they had in the past. Timothy Leary is wanted all over the globe, you know, and they're going to track him down. So I brought in an article from the Monterey Herald, June 27, 1968, when Jim Garrison had a trial in New Orleans and wanted to say that Clay Shaw was part of a conspiracy to murder. Four or five of the people in New Orleans that he wanted fled to other states. Jim couldn't have a trial. People say, what happened in New Orleans? Well, Sarge Ocasio-Smith went to Texas, and Conley, who was the governor, wouldn't let him go to New Orleans. And Gordon Novell said, well, I'm a CIA man, and I don't have to stand trial. So he went to Ohio, and the governor there wouldn't let him stand trial. So in 1968, Jim Garrison wanted to interview Edgar Eugene Bradley, who he said was a West Coast business representative for Dr. Carl McIntyre, the religious leader, and that there were charges that he was in Texas, seen in front of the book depository at the time of the assassination, and that Roger Craig, one of the sheriffs, saw Bradley on the steps of the book depository. And Bradley said that wasn't possible. He was on a bus between Tulsa and El Paso, Texas, which shows that Bradley was not in California.
Yeah.
And somebody recognized him and knew him and saw him at the book depository. So Ronald Reagan refused extradition for that trial. If Bradley was innocent, he would have come back home. But this was, he was wanted on a charge of conspiracy to murder. And Reagan refused to extradite Bradley on a murder charge.
Mm-hmm.
But
I
he's getting
that.
The government to force Leary back here on a
marijuana possession.
And using all of the money and $1 million in a court trial, and he sent guards over there. They squeezed him out of Algeria. They had to buy up practically all the gas of Algeria for a Texas company in order to move Cleaver on, you know, and chase him around the world. They'll be moving him out now. And they're going to get Leary, and they'll go to no end and have these lengthy trials.
And Leary is wanted for mere possession, whereas Governor Reagan would not allow a man who had taken refuge in California to be extradited on a charge of conspiracy to murder.
That's right. Now we're going.
And that's why Jim Garrison never had a trial and never put together any kind of a case, is because all the key witnesses had done just this, gone to various other states.
Or were killed.
And the governors of those states wouldn't extradite them.
That's right. You see, the
people who want to discredit Garrison are able to say, well, see, he didn't have any case. If he did, he'd have put it together and he'd have come to court and he would have proven his charges. But he couldn't do that because of people like Governor Reagan refusing to extradite this man. And so
now you get the picture. Yeah, How can you have a case if they're all protected?
And if that is Governor Reagan's attitude, you know, if he were consistent in that attitude, well, you could say, well, that's just the way Governor Reagan sees things. However, that's not the way Governor Reagan sees things, because he wants to extradite Timothy Leary and is spending a great deal of money to get Leary extradited back here so he can throw him back in prison.
And not even on a murder charge.
And it's not even a serious charge.
That's right, if he didn't believe in that at all. But he fought tooth and nail and kept Bradley here. If a murder charge, you can let a person go there. The jury, the 12 jury in New Orleans, wouldn't say Bradley was involved in a conspiracy if they didn't think he was. And if Garrison could have had all his witnesses when he arrested Clay Shaw, he had a lot of witnesses, but they all disappeared. And they never were allowed to go back. They went into the key states that are controlled, that were involved in the assassination, and then they're not allowed to go back for the trial. How can you have a trial? That makes Jim Garrison look like a fool.
You know, of all the, something I flashed on at the beginning of this program when you were talking about the fears of your family, you know, for your life or your welfare and all that, one of the names that we haven't mentioned very often when we're talking about the great number of people who have been killed, there was a great deal of suspicion, at least suspicion, surrounding the death of Louis Lomax, author and television and radio personality from Los Angeles. And he became involved in assassination research.
Yes, he didn't care about who killed John Kennedy, but he did care about Martin Luther King.
When Martin Luther King was killed, then he started
Yeah, Lomax's car was overturned, and he was killed. Now, this week, Bob, I have an article here that I think is one of the most important documents to come up, or a thing that I'm putting together in my research, and I'm going to share it with you because it was in the newspapers and the Monterey Herald, and I'm going to show how I go back into my filing system. Just like the article on the extradition of Leary this week, I go back to 1968 in June and pull out the Reagan extradition of Bradley, where he wouldn't extradite him.
To show that he was not too consistent.
But through the years, by my cross-filing articles and putting them into their chronological order, and they should be indexed, it would be wonderful if I could get volunteer help of students and people to help me index my articles, which should be done and put into computers someday. But the Monterey Herald had an article in the paper, and the San Jose Mercury and the Los Angeles Times carried this. I take 8 papers a day. They carried the story I'm going to read to you. The San Francisco Chronicle didn't carry it. The article in our newspaper up here says, "Coroner's aide held as a fraud." And I'm going to read you the quotes. In Los Angeles, a deputy Los Angeles County medical examiner for 3.5 years, with neither a medical degree nor a physician's degree, authorized documents and said that he belonged to the coroner's staff, that he was a doctor, and he also said he had a legal degree. And his name is Donald Angus Stewart, 50 years old. He came to Los Angeles July 1968, 1 month after the autopsy of Robert Kennedy. And the doctor who did the autopsy on Robert Kennedy was Thomas Noguchi, the head coroner. The authorities have said that the felony perjury starts from the testimony that Stewart gave in civil service commission hearings on the Noguchi in 1969, since Stewart claimed himself to be an expert medical witness. Now, it turns out that Stewart never practiced medicine in his life, that he had been through various hospitals in Chicago, the Bahamas, and Florida without a license.
He had no license. He had no medical degree.
He came with a law degree and a medical degree. He didn't have either one. That's right. And he became on the staff of the coroner's office in Los Angeles. And it turned out that what he was doing, he was a year after the autopsy of Robert Kennedy. Thomas Noguchi was discredited and fired from the county coroner's office. And I saved all the articles on Noguchi because it fits in with the Robert Kennedy murder. So I went to my files of 1969 under Robert Kennedy to see if I saw the name of Donald Angus Stewart. And Noguchi was fired for various charges. They made a list of charges that he was crazy, mentally ill, glassy-eyed, used drugs, he was bizarre, he danced around bodies, he liked to be famous, he was waiting for Kennedy to arrive because he said, "I hope he dies, and if he dies, I'll have an international reputation." He hoped a helicopter would crash. They said he did a dance of reincarnation of Dante's Inferno and said, "Isn't it nice?" because a helicopter crashed and the bodies were coming to the coroner's office. The witnesses said he prayed for air crashes and collisions. Well, it turned out that Dr. Thomas Noguchi had gone through medical school, was a certified doctor, gave an autopsy on Robert Kennedy, and he got a certificate from the Board of Supervisors in the County of Los Angeles for the excellent autopsy. 3 doctors were present. They thought it was a complete autopsy. The autopsy read that Robert Kennedy was shot 1 inch from the back of the head and had powder gun wound at the back of the head. And I thought that the reason Noguchi had been discredited or they tried to fire him was that they didn't like the autopsy he did on Robert Kennedy. And if the truth came out where the gunman was in relationship to that bullet,
then they'd know it was not Sirhan.
Then Sirhan couldn't have fired the fatal bullet, and they could say, well, Noguchi was crazy at the time of the autopsy. Well, Noguchi got a good lawyer, Godfrey Isaac, who's now the attorney for Sirhan, who took each one of the witnesses in the county coroner's office and board of supervisors who was slamming him down and showed how they would recommend him for promotions, how he was doing a good job, and what he was doing in a county coroner's job was a perfectly sane position, and they were trying to make him insane. And I came across an article that, in addition to the Robert Kennedy murder, you see, his autopsy was shedding light, and he was interviewed when they fired him from the position of the coroner. He fought back. He said, "I'm not going to take it lying down. I'm going to fight back." And he was asked certain questions about the Robert Kennedy assassination, how at the time of Sirhan's trial, he couldn't bring out the evidence he wanted, and the judge shut him up, and he couldn't talk about the wound in the neck. And he thought that maybe the repression coming on it had something to do with that. But there was another article I have found called "New Information About the County Coroner's Office." And this is the most important article of all. In the Dr. Stewart, who wasn't a doctor, arrived in Los Angeles in 1968, 1 month after the Robert Kennedy murder. And he's been working there for 3 years until they caught him this last week that he was a fake and a perjurer. Dr. Stewart was in charge of the coroner inquest department, and every killing of the Black Panthers or black people, he was writing justifiable homicide. He was placing the coroner's office, and Noguchi was exposing him and saying, here's an article, new information about the case, in quotes, in the Deadwilder case 4 years ago, in which a black man was shot by an L.A. cop under extremely questionable circumstances, the coroner's inquest quickly ruled justifiable homicide. And Noguchi, who was not coroner then, but working in the coroner's office, disputed the finding of justifiable homicide. Again, in the Leonard case, in which a Black Panther was shot by the police, and the recent Bode case, in which another black man was shot by the police while he sat in a car in the front of his home, Noguchi was extremely disturbed and said that Dr. Donald Stewart, deputy medical examiner and chief inquest hearing officer, ruled all of these cases justifiable homicide too fast without evidence, and Stewart has been one of Noguchi's chief antagonists. In other words, the county coroner is saying these were murders by the police department, and a man with no license, evidently he is an agent of our government, who is placed in the Los Angeles area to systematically kill black people, who has no medical degree and no law degree, and a doctor is saying these are cold-blooded murders. So what they try...
Well, then every case that he's ruled on should be reopened.
Well, this is why I'm on a tape of this show set to several of the people of the news media in Los Angeles, and I think that the black people down there, and I'm doing this very seriously and clearly, the black leaders in Los Angeles should demand to see every homicide case since 1968, July 68, and they should examine the evidence of whether the man was like sitting in his car, and individually, each family should sue the Los Angeles Police Department and charge them with murder. As well as we'll go into that special...
Well, here again, it would be very difficult to round up the evidence, especially any physical evidence that might be involved, because in a case as important as the Robert Kennedy case, there's missing evidence, there's missing weapons, there's...
But you see what happens here. If you get, like, up in San Jose, and we talked about this in September of this year, when this John Smith, the IBM chemist, a black man with a doctor's degree, a chemist working at IBM, was shot at 4 in the morning by Officer Woolley and two plainclothes men who had been out on a drinking spree for 16 hours. They took a man on so-called traffic citation. There were three there. They let the dogs out and bit him. His body was filled with wounds. He was hit on the head with flashlight. He had mace in two eyes. And Officer Woolley got off on the grounds that the man used profanity. You see, that he used profanity. We could go into that.
That's grounds for immediate execution.
And Chief of Police of Murphy came right in the very first day and said it was justifiable homicide. While the jury was out this week deciding the fate of Officer Woolley, Evel Younger appointed Chief of Police Murphy to his special promotion of attack squad. And the lawyer defending Woolley came from San Diego. Now, you put this together, we don't know if the coroners or the policemen even have the degrees they say they have in this state. If a city like Los Angeles has the black people aroused because they're sitting in a car and they're shot, and a man says it's a justifiable homicide and he doesn't have a degree from any institution.
Wasn't he asked to give references or anything? You know, like, I know that when I've applied for jobs just about anywhere, from the time I was very young, if I applied for a job as a dishwasher or a waiter in a restaurant or something, I had to give references.
Well, this is one.
And there was some check made to find out whether indeed I had ever worked in a restaurant before I'd be hired.
That's right. This is one of the most, it's the largest city in the United States outside of New York, and it's one with problems like Watts and racial problems piling up. You have people charging, one group of people saying oppression, we're being systematically killed, and therefore, it would be important if the sole man in charge of deciding whether it's justifiable or not is a total fraud. You have to say, in my research, I say that there's a network of conspiracy that links over the country. So when I find this evidence, it makes my work more valid because I know what's happening, and I know that our intelligence agencies were set up originally to gather information on groups of people that could be a danger to our country, whether in another nation or in our own cities. But they're not set up to systematically kill. I brought in the issue.
Well, let's just ask the average listener, do you think that if you went to Los Angeles and applied for a position as deputy coroner, and let's assume that you have no medical degree, no medical background, that you have no license to practice, do you think you would be considered for that job?
Well, let me put it this way. In our own local community, because I'm talking about problems which people think are too far away from them, like New York or Washington or Jamaica or Los Angeles. In our own local community, a man came here several years ago to become deputy coroner of Monterey County. And his name is Mr. Shaw. I understand he just resigned about a month or two ago. I don't think he's in the coroner's office at the time. And he's from Army Intelligence. His whole background was in the social section of the Monterey Herald, the War College in Germany, his period of service. And it says it, Army Intelligence. The Monterey Herald had an article about a recipe that his wife was giving and cooking, you know, famous people on the peninsula. And the county coroner isn't a medical man at all. And if the head medical man is away on a weekend, and if there's a murder on this peninsula, suicide, like going off Rocky Point, all these hippies, or drugs, and you say they overdose of drugs, or anything that you want to wipe somebody out, a man from Army Intelligence is your coroner in this Monterey Peninsula. And that doesn't make sense to me, why that man should have the decision. If somebody murders me, for my research, they can just say, well, she commits suicide. If they don't want me to do the research, he would make the decision if he were still there. And who replaces him? I don't know who replaced him. They haven't advertised that. Is he Army Intelligence, too? That doesn't make sense.
Hmm.
We're talking about our local community, and I keep an envelope. I told you I have 1,800 subjects of current things, and you have to keep one on who are the coroners in these cities. Now, I have the one about Mr. Shaw. I think it's interesting that he was a deputy county coroner here. And then when I read that a man goes into the city of Los Angeles and wants to say that these are cold-blooded murders or justifiable homicide, it's terrible. But then what do? They hit Noguchi and begin to make him insane. And what Noguchi said...
Well, they totally discredited Noguchi,
I think. Many times we've talked about mind control, and this is the problem. What Noguchi said was in the 50s, they used to make you think to be a communist was to discredit you, the scare. And now they try to say that you're insane. So Noguchi took every point that they tried to charge about his insanity, and he showed who said it and challenged them right down the line and came out, was reappointed a coroner, the head of the county coroner of Los Angeles, was reinstated. And now, 3 years later, Mr. Stewart is out. I brought an article from June 1969 from the Los Angeles Times in quotes, "Four accused of false testimony on Noguchi." And in the article, it says Isaac, that Noguchi's attorney, said that Dr. Donald A. Stewart, the county's acting inquest officer, absolutely equivocally lied about a capsule test he conducted in order to determine what kind of drugs Noguchi was allegedly taking. End quotes. Now, in 69, they referred him as a doctor who absolutely unequivocally lied about a coroner in Los Angeles. Can you imagine what he would do on a black case or why he was sent into the area if a lawyer can say that about him against Dr. Noguchi? And Noguchi identified, you see, he was a young teenager at the time of the last war. And at the trial, they said, well, if he was a Japanese, he was at Pearl Harbor looking through the periscope, you know, at the ships, and they accused him of being a Japanese traitor. And Godfrey Isaac said he was 14 years old and his family was taken to the internment camps in California. And the reason he didn't accept the firing was that he and his wife decided, we're going to stand up against this system.
Because okay, well, now all this goes back to what I was referring to, the job.